just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now. Hey, I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now.
Develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Wrecked by the stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. Knees of the bees, man. Devy happy hour now. I trust him with everything. Every confidence giving me confidence. Sipping is hopping and really no stopping. I'll make you a champion, y'all put a sock in it. But this is life, bro. They're at it all night though. So you can just drive slow and get down with the Devy crew.
I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now. Hey, I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening, wherever you are listening. This is episode number 63 of the Devy Happy Hour, the first one of 2021. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas or Happy Holiday, whatever you celebrate. I hope it was a great time, preferably with family and staying healthy and safe. And as they say in Cameroon, Meta New Year to all of you. Welcome back. This is Skip Newton from Eagan, Minnesota, the winter wonderland. We are now the frozen tundra, of course, as winter struck just before Christmas. So we got our white Christmas after all. Of course, I was vacationing in Texas with my wife and family. It was awesome down there enjoying the 70-degree weather. But back to reality. I have to get into more reality with my co-host. He's got to be flying high as he had a wonderful New Year yesterday as his Buckeyes absolutely put an ass-whooping on the Clemson Tigers. How you feeling about that from North Carolina, Mr. Matthew Jackson, sir?
Man, I am flying on cloud nine right now, man, after that game. I'm telling you, Happy New Year to you, Skip. I was going to ask you if you got a white Christmas this year, but being as you were in Texas, I don't reckon you saw any snow down there in Texas. Dude, I'm doing so good. I'm repping my new Ohio State sweatshirt. You can see it in the camera right now. I got that for Christmas. So, dude, I'm doing great. I bet you Dabo Sweeney's not doing so good. I bet he wishes he could take back that number 11 ranking of the Ohio State Buckeyes in his final year AP College Poll. That didn't turn out so well for him, but stoked to see an Ohio State National Championship, man. Doing great. Excited to be back here talking some football with you.
Yeah, it was an interesting strategy by Dabo to give a little bit of extra motivation to his opponent. That didn't play out so well, so maybe perhaps he'll keep his mouth shut next time, but he's got a whole year to think about that as we get ready for what should be an awesome championship game. Of course, we'll talk more about that later. But man, we got a little bit of news to get into. Ironically, about the same player here. I had be sure to written down that Derek King, the Miami quarterback, announced he's going to come back to Miami for his 2021 season, and then promptly tears his ACL in the best tasting bowl game, the Cheez-It Bowl. So, kind of a roller coaster for him, a bummer, I think, but maybe that opens the door for the freshman quarterback there in Miami. They had a pretty highly rated recruit. I'm trying to find that name off the top of my head right now as I'm struggling to look through my notes, but we'll see what happens there. What are your thoughts on Derek King? You know, do you think he's one of those guys that he'll take the medical red shirt and try to play again the year after that, or do you think he might just be done?
Man, I think this is good for him, for sure. When you look at his draft stock, he wasn't a guy that was gonna get a whole lot of draft stock. I mean, there was at least six quarterbacks, right, that you could argue that were gonna go in the between the first and second round, and I mean, he was gonna be a late, probably at best day two pick, if not a day three pick. At the quarterback position, he was having a good season, but he was definitely off and on. He struggled early on in the season, so I think this is good for him. Definitely hope that he comes back, you know, fully recovered from the ACL tear. The backup quarterback that they had that came in for King looked great. I mean, he looked good while he was playing. So if he comes back, I mean, I don't imagine there being a quarterback controversy. I mean, this I by all accounts, this is King's team. But he did look good, so it makes things interesting on his return. With that being said, Skip, you know, you mentioned the best tasting bowl. I gotta ask, Cheez-Its versus Cheez Nips, where you leaning?
Oh, I'm an old-fashioned Cheez-Its guy. I do love the taste of Cheez-Its. It's kind of that, you know, guilty addiction. I will never forget opening up a bag of Cheez-Its as a kid. I don't know how old I was. You know, early teens. Old enough to probably know better about what I was doing. And, you know, it's the deal where they come in the box just like they do today. And they've got, you know, the bag that you try to open up at the top by pulling the two sides apart, because there's no other easy way to do this other than, you know, get a scissors and cut it off. But who wants to do that?
It explodes everywhere.
Oh yeah, and those suckers, I finally got it, and they just, I mean, the whole thing just exploded everywhere. We had Cheez-Its all over the place. My mom, I don't know if she was in the room or she was close by, but she enjoyed a good laugh about that. I mean, it just burst out in laughter, and I'm just, you know, cursing under my breath, you know, son of a, but no big deal. You know, we implemented the 10 second rule and picked those suckers up really quick.
My wife always makes fun of me because I prefer the Cheez Nips for some weird reason. Like they taste more like the fake Cheez-Its, and there's something about that I like, and I can't figure out what it is. My wife always makes fun of me. She was like, "You like that fake tasting cheese?" Like when it comes to like the mac and cheese boxes, right? Like I like the Velveeta like squirt cheese. I don't like the homemade mac and cheese. Like I like the fake cheese, and she loves to give me crap about it.
Kane Fasel would be so proud of us for talking about food at the beginning of our Devi podcast. He has just got to be loving this already. So shout out to you, Kane. This one's for you. What we would like to talk about today, other than food, of course, is kind of a Devi review of some of the bigger bowl games, just to kind of do a final thoughts on what we saw from your best Devi prospects, because there was a lot of them. Of course, we didn't analyze every single game, or that would take forever, but you know, just getting right into that, you know, the Alamo Bowl, Texas, Colorado, man, Bijan Robinson has absolutely taken over for that running backfield, and 183 yards and a touchdown on 10 carries, and then he added another couple of receptions for 37 yards. Both went for scores. The only word I can think about for this guy is what a stud.
That's absolutely right. You know, at the beginning of the season, we were talking about Tank Bigsby and Jahmyr Gibbs and debating those two as the best running backs in this class so far. And all Bijan did was come out and go, "Hey, remember that guy that was still the number one running back in the class? Yeah, I'm still here." You know, it kind of leaves me scratching my head. I'm like, I don't know how, as a Texas team, you just refuse to get this kid the ball until later on in the season. I mean, he's got the lateral quickness. He's got the long speed. He's explosive. I mean, he's got the punt return and kick return ability that we love. We talked about it in our podcast. We love it all the time. So, I mean, I don't know how you don't get this kid the ball. This kid is going to be the class of that running back class for the next 3 years. And it's going to be a fun debate between him, Gibbs, and Tank Bigsby over the next few years.
Yeah, we are set up really nicely in the 2023 rookie draft. Obviously, if they all go when they're eligible, but it's shaping up already to be an awesome running back class. Of course, I was high going into the season on Keontae Ingram. He just couldn't stay healthy. I still like his game, you know, when he plays, but you know, it's obviously not gonna pan out for him. I don't know if he's gonna go pro or if he's gonna transfer. I haven't caught anything about that, but disappointing for that regard. But man, I do have a couple of Bijan Robinson shares on some teams, so I'm loving that, and his future looks absolutely exquisite. Just to follow up quick on that Miami quarterback situation, it was Jake Garcia is the 2021 signee, four-star. So he's the guy that, you know, could get an opportunity now that King is out, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. The next bowl game I've got on my list, and this one was an absolute drubbing, the Cotton Bowl, Florida and Oklahoma. Oklahoma absolutely putting the smackdown on Florida. You know, they basically did anything they wanted offensively, you know, putting up over 50 points. What were your thoughts on this game, and what Devy guys did you take an interest in as you were paying attention to this one?
So just all completely on the record, I mean, just off the top of the hat, we all know how much I love Kyle Trask. I've been on record all season having him as my QB3. Like, you know how much I love Kyle Trask. Those who listen to us are aware of how much I love Kyle Trask. He struggled this game, and that's not a secret. You know, when you look at what he was doing, he was overthrowing receivers, hit his timing with guys. He was throwing the ball behind receivers. He threw three interceptions when he's had, what, five all year. I mean, he did not have a good game. And part of that was on him. I mean, he was not accurate. He was overthrowing guys. He wasn't leading guys the right way. The timing was off. But the flip side of this, you know, everybody's going to try and drop Kyle Trask in the rankings. Oh, he's going to have this massive fall now after this game. I think we need to pump the brakes just a little bit. I mean, when you look at who they had, Kyle Trask was without his top four receivers in this game. They had 60 draft eligible or 60 scholarship players on the roster. I think 11 of them had opted out to prepare for the NFL draft. I mean, this was not the same Florida team that we had gotten all year. They were playing freshmen that hadn't gotten into the game all season. They're now playing in their biggest game of the season. I mean, this was not the same team that we were used to seeing, and Kyle Trask's timing with these new receivers was just off. It's a game to watch for Kyle Trask. It's something to keep in mind when you're preparing to draft him in your NFL draft for sure. You know, do we have accuracy issues? Do we not? Was it just the timing with his receivers? But I think we need to pump the brakes on some of the stuff that I've seen on Twitter about, you know, just dropping Kyle Trask out of even the draft picture on your fantasy teams. I mean, he was playing with some new receivers, so that's something that we all need to just sit tight and know what we saw with Kyle Trask the entire season for sure.
Yeah, those are great points. You don't want to overreact to one game or even two games. I mean, every quarterback has bad games, every one of them. And we're going to get into more of that as we talk about more of the bowl games. But the thing with Trask is, you know, the general consensus is there's kind of a top six in the 2021 quarterback class, right? And it's always the question of, okay, who's, you know, we know who the top two are. We have a pretty good idea, three, four-ish maybe, but that's where you start to get into that discussion over who do you like more at three through six. And I think it's unrealistic to expect all six to go in the first round. I mean, that would be a pretty rare NFL draft to have six teams spend first-round capital on a quarterback. So at least one of these guys, if not two of them, are going to fall out of the first round and go to, you know, day two or maybe even farther. You know, like last year, Eason fell all the way, I think, to the early fourth round to the Colts, and everyone's kind of forgetting about them. You know, and they're the popular team for, you know, who's going to go get Carson Wentz or who's going to, you know, go get the next, you know, free agent guy that could, you know, take them over the top. It's like, well, maybe they like the development of this kid and he could surprise people. Of course, I'm a little biased because I've got him on like at least a half dozen teams, so I'm really hoping he takes a job. But yeah, with Kyle Trask, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's the guy that falls in the draft a little bit, you know, into day two or maybe even early day three. But I think to your point on, you know, let's not just completely shut it out. You know, he's that guy. You got to wait and see. You know, what draft capital does he get? What situation does he get drafted on? You know, if he goes to a team that, you know, you like their offensive philosophy and the way they've developed, you know, quarterbacks in the future, you know, or in the past, you know, but he's not the guy next year, he might sit for a year. That could be the perfect scenario for him. You know, it all depends on that. We talk about landing spot, and it is important, and draft capital, of course, is. So it'll be really interesting on Trask to go to the other quarterback in this game. Also one of your guys, man, Spencer Rattler continues to develop and look the part, really. I mean, he just, the confidence is absolutely off the charts, I think, with this guy, and it's benefiting him more than not. You know, there's sometimes you get a little too over cocky and confident, and you start making decisions with the ball that end up being bad decisions, where you put your team at risk, you know, like turning the ball over, you know, throwing into double coverage when you shouldn't. you don't see as much of that now as we're seeing early in the season. I mean, he is absolutely progressing, and this is exactly what we wanted to see. I mean, he's put himself in that conversation for sure as tier one quarterbacks in 2022. I don't expect any sort of argument from you. You've been preaching this for pretty much months now.
Yeah, I love myself some Spencer Rattler. I mean, the arm talent was there. We were never questioning his arm talent because, I mean, he's got a cannon. He's mobile in the pocket. And some of the throws that he makes just across his body 40 yards down the field, just dropping a dime in his receiver's breadbasket. I mean, those are throws that you just can't teach a kid. But what the big thing that we had on him was just his decision-making process and his mentality and just his growth. I mean, this is his first year as starter for this team. So we wanted to see him grow up a little bit. And, I mean, definitely after that benching that he had early on in the season, he came back, and I don't think I'm going to get any argument from you. I mean, he's looked like a different quarterback ever since he got benched early on in the season. He's making smarter decisions with the football. He's just running the offense, and he's not being risky. He's just hitting the open receiver. He's running the offense. And when you look at that gunslinger, not that I would call him a gunslinger, but when you look at that sort of mentality of just what he could be, the first thing I think of is Brock Purdy, right? I mean, the flip side of what Spencer Rattler is doing and running the offense and making smart throws and still having that arm talent, the flip side of that is what Brock Purdy's done and just letting the ball rip and making bad decisions and throwing interceptions. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where he could have gone either way, and luckily for all the Spencer Rattler owners, he's grown up since that benching, and he's turned into a guy that's going to be a top quarterback and his draft class. I feel that deep to my bones. I love myself some Spencer Rattler.
Yeah, and you backed that up in the one league, one of the leagues that we're in together. We talked about this, you know, quite a while back when you traded Pat Mahomes for a package of players, and one of the players you got in return was Spencer Rattler. I mean, that's how high you are on this kid. So
the flip side of that is, though, one of the other guys in that package was Journey Brown, and I still feel the stab to the heart for that one.
Ooh, I forgot that he was a part of that. Ouch. Yeah, that's not good. I also made a trade for Journey Brown before the season, so that one stung as well. You know, the thing about quarterbacks, and you know, we talked about the gunslinger and that there's the good and the bad, and what you really need is that guy that understands when to take those chances. You know, the calculated risks. They have the tools. They have the traits to make plays that other guys can't make, but they don't rely on that constantly and just, you know, like I said, you know, make bad decisions to put their team at risk. You know, Brock Purdy was a great example of that, right? He just does it too frequently, whereas Rattler seems to be figuring that out. You know, and in a game like this, of course, when you're running the ball for as many yards as they did, you know, it was way up there. I don't have the stat in front of me, but I think it was over 300. I mean, they were just gaping holes. You know, Seth McGowan, the true freshman, was busting off a couple of long runs. And Ramondre Stevenson, the JUCO recruit, I mean, was absolutely just a bulldozer. I mean, man, that kid was fun to watch. It's like, you know, I heard the line on Twitter. Someone said it was really good. The Najee Harris of the Big 12. Those two dudes, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they develop. Of course, Stevenson more than likely, I think, is going to go pro and in a deep class. So it'll be interesting to see how that transitions. But Seth McGowan is a good freshman. Thoughts on his game and where you have him in what we've already talked about to setting up to be a great 2023 rookie class for running backs.
Seth McGowan's good, man. I mean, there's no denying the talent that this kid has. I mean, he's shown it this entire year. I mean, he's shifty between spaces. He's got the lateral agility. I mean, and he's got a little bit of long speed to his game. I don't think he's a burner by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got the speed to take it to the house when he needs to. I mean, he's, for me in this class, I think I would still have him RB6-ish right now. But, I mean, this is shaping up to be just such a great class. One of the guys that you hit on that I really liked this game and that I've liked the last few games is Ramondre Stevenson, the senior running back for Oklahoma. I mean, he's, when you look at him, I mean, he's 6 foot, 246 pounds listed. He does not play like that, though. I mean, he plays big and he runs through guys, but he's so elusive in open space to be 246 pounds. I mean, his lateral agility and his ability to break tackles, not by being physical, but by shaking defenders into open space at his size is really impressive. And I think, was it Matt Bruning, who we've had on this podcast a few podcasts ago, made the comp to Maurice Jones-Drew. And I don't particularly hate that comp at all. I mean, when you look at a big back that's shifty in open space, I mean, he's shown the ability to be able to catch the ball. I mean, I like that comp a whole lot. And while that may be the upper ceiling level of Ramondre Stevenson, I mean, this kid has got talent, and he's going to be an underrated running back to target in your rookie draft if he goes pro this year.
Yeah, absolutely. He could be one of those guys that moves up boards if he has a really good showing at the combine, you know, where all of a sudden his measurables start to pop more than his production did, because he didn't get a lot of opportunity in college, but he definitely looks like, you know, he's someone that you need to think about. You know, my first thoughts on him were, yeah, I don't know if this guy's going to be drafted. He might fall all the way, but now the more that we talk about and the more that I think about his game, I'm kind of stepping back from that initial thought on Stevenson, and he definitely looks like he could find a role in the NFL and potentially provide some fantasy goodness. You know, the wide receivers for Oklahoma continue to be, you know, a mystery for me. I think the one that people are going to get the most excited about is Marvin Mims, because he's a freshman, looks really good, you know, getting the production that you want to see from a true freshman. You know, the other guys, you know, it's Rambo, you've got Weiss, you know, both guys that we were higher on coming into the season, and just wondering, you know, which of these guys is the guy that, you know, that we should be focused on? Who's going to step up? I don't know exactly which one I like better, because they both seem to have their positives, and I'd like to know, where are you at with those two guys? Do you have a preference? I know before the season I was a Weiss guy. Now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, my preference is Jadon Hazelwood.
Right.
No, but for real, I mean, I still have to believe in Weiss. I mean, he's got the long speed. He can beat you over the top. He's a great route runner, and he has soft hands. I mean, he's everything that you want in a receiver, except the production profile. Like, he hasn't put on the production profile this season that we thought he was going to. So, I mean, hopefully next year, you know, we see more from Theo Weiss. But I still have to believe in that kid. I mean, when you look at Rambo, I mean, he can go pro this year, I believe. So, I mean, maybe he'll go pro, maybe he'll stay another year. But, I mean, Rambo isn't somebody that I'm too terribly excited about. He was one of Oklahoma's top receivers last year. He's definitely dropped off a little bit. So, but I mean, so did a lot of those receivers. I mean, Marvin Mims is the guy to own in this offense. That's not a shock to anybody. We've seen what he's done all year. But if I'm having to pick between those two, I'm picking Theo Weiss.
Okay. Yeah, I can get behind that. Of course, you know, you get a little nervous when a guy comes back for a senior year and he really hasn't had that breakout season. And even if he does have a great season next year, you know, 1 year of awesome production as a senior is usually a red flag, just because the percentages of those guys that hit when they get in the NFL aren't as high versus guys that have breakout years, you know, at age 18 or 19.
And then you got the whole Devontae Smith argument, where he's too old and he doesn't have a production profile, and for some reason we don't want to draft a top receiver in the NFL draft. I don't.
yeah, we were going to get into that.
That's a different topic
when we get to that bowl game. So you know what? Let's go ahead and use that as a transition, as they say in the business. Devonta Smith, the Alabama Notre Dame game. I think this one played out, you know, the Rose Bowl played out exactly how a lot of people thought it would. Other than the fact that it was a little more lower scoring than maybe we were expecting, but the fact that Alabama won by a couple of scores wasn't a big surprise at all. In fact, I expected them to win by more, but it seemed like they took the foot off the gas a little bit at the end. But Devonta Smith, I mean, he is absolutely checked off every box, just from a standpoint of watching him play and the things that he does as a wide receiver. I don't know what people could possibly not like, other than the fact that he didn't break out as a freshman or sophomore. That's literally the only thing against him. You know, and let's remind ourselves, when he was a freshman and sophomore, it wasn't like there wasn't any talent around there at wide receiver in Alabama. I mean, you've got, you know, help me out here. You've got Ruggs, you've got
Judy, you got
Jerry Judy. Yeah, I mean,
was Ridley there his freshman year? I can't remember how long Ridley's been in the league.
He might have been. I'd have to go back and look. But right, I mean, Ridley was there, and then you know Waddle. I mean, it's like they've got constantly are four deep at wide receiver, and he still put up over 1,200 yards last season with I think 12 or 14 touchdowns, something like that. So it's not like he's the 1 year senior that just popped. And even his sophomore year, he had like 700 yards and 6 touchdowns. So again, it wasn't like he did nothing. I mean, the kid is so good. And I guess for me, you know, you can look at those stats and the breakout age, but the thing that I keep getting back to when I watch him play, he just passes the eye test. He just looks like a great wide receiver. I mean, he makes good. He runs good routes to get open, and it's not just using his speed to, you know, to fly by people on a nine route or on a deep post. It's no, he will do nice comebacks. He'll slant into the middle. He can run that quick, you know, kind of wide receiver screen. And when he's running, and I made this comment on Twitter, I know he's running fast because you just know he is, but it doesn't look like he is until you see the fact that he's constantly pulling away from the defender that's trying to catch him, or he's beating an angle, you know, running down the sidelines and the safety of the corner's got an angle on him, yet they can't make the tackle because he completely obliterates that angle, or the short pass where he's looking to turn the corner and it's like, oh, that guy's got him. It's like, nope, there he goes. And man, I love watching this kid play. And then on top of that, you hear all these things about him, about his mental preparation. And he's a smart player. He's into the game. He wants to know what, not just what he's supposed to do, but the overall, you know, offensive scheme and what everyone's role is. So, you know, he can play his part. And I hear all that and I'm thinking, man, this kid has to be one of the top players, you know, at wide receiver coming in next year. I mean, he's I'm going to have to relook at my tiers, and he might have to be in tier one for me. Where are you at with Devonta Smith?
Well, for any of those that saw my rankings, we all know where I am with Devonta Smith. He's my wide receiver one for this class, and I'm not shy to talk to anybody about that. I mean, I love this kid. I think the word you were looking for that really strikes out to me is just effortless. I mean, there's a fine example of his game just yesterday where he catches the ball near the sidelines on a quick little wide receiver screen route. And I mean, there's three guys in front of him with one blocker, and he somehow ends up dancing the sidelines past all three of them in for a touchdown. I mean, he's deceptively fast. Not that that's even possible, because I mean, we all know how fast he is. So I mean, he's fast. What I really like about him is his just explosion off the line. I mean, when you look at his route running and the way he manipulates defenders, I mean, that are set up 10 yards away from him at the start, and he somehow ends up blowing by him, and he's always open. And when you look at some of the other top receivers in this class, we can't say that for some of these guys, that they're just always open. And that's the way I feel like Devonta Smith is. He's always open. You know, the arguments, he's got the production profile. He did it last year on a loaded wide receiver roster. You could watch, if you watched any Alabama game last year, you can't sit there and argue that at times he wasn't the best wide receiver on the field. I mean, there's no way that you can come away from watching a game and not say that. And he's by far blown away any expectations that we had of him this year. He's by far been the best wide receiver. And I know that the Heisman is a quarterback award. I get that. Quarterbacks win this award since, what was it, Derrick Henry was the last non-quarterback to win this. Devonta Smith is your Heisman. Like, let's cut the nonsense. He's been the best player in college football this year, and it's not particularly close. So with that being said, his only argument against him was his BMI. I'm not concerned with his BMI. When you watch him on game film, if you're watching away from the ball and you're just strictly watching Devonta Smith, some of the blocks that he throws on defenders whenever Najee Harris is running the ball, I mean, there's been several times where I've been watching his film and he's pushed guys to the ground. He's shoved guys out of the way. Like, he's small, but he's stronger than a lot of people think he is. Like, his BMI is not something I'm concerned with. And then it's his age, right? People want to talk about his age and, oh, he's 22 years old. He's forever old in wide receiver terms coming to the league. 22 years old, look, you're still getting 8 years out of a wide receiver in Dynasty. That's forever. Like, I'm not concerned with his BMI. I'm not concerned with his age. He's the best route runner, the best wide receiver in college football right now. He's the best wide receiver in this draft. And if he slides anywhere in any of the drafts I'm in, I'm going to be doing victory laps around my house, because there's no reason that this dude doesn't deserve to be one of the top wide receivers taken in next year's draft.
Yeah, he's going to be a first-round pick, so I'd be shocked if he slid. He just doesn't have the profile to be the kind of guy that I think would fall in rookie drafts. You know, you put the word to the thought that I had, effortless, and that's exactly what it looks like with him. He also makes those tough sideline catches where he's got to, you know, make a nice hands catch and make sure he's keeping his toes in bound. So he's got that awareness as well and that ability. That just speaks to me about what a complete player he is. He's just a good football player. And so
he can go up and get the ball too. I mean, there are several players where you're watching him. He high points the ball. He's jumping 3 feet in the air and extending the ball, catching the ball over defenders. I mean, there's nothing not to like about this kid.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he runs at the combine, just the 40 time. That'll be really interesting, because I'm guessing it's going to be, you know, in the 4.3s, and that's, you know, that's just wicked fast. You know, another guy that I've heard people knock because of age, because he's going to be 23, I believe, is the stud running back from Alabama, Najee Harris. And you know, I haven't made any sort of secret about my love for Najee Harris. He's still my RB1 coming in next year. I've got him on three different rosters already. I think he's also the real deal, and I still think he's underrated as a pass catcher. He's so good at catching the ball out of the backfield. I mean, I saw a discussion on Twitter today between him and Travis Etienne, and again, we're arguing over, you know, RB1, RB2. It's like, well, they're both good. It's okay to like them both. And who's the better pass catcher? You know, it's going to look better for ETN, I think, if he gets the ball in space, because when he catches it, he is faster. So he's going to just explode into that open space. But, you know, I love them both. I love Najee Harris's ability to be the between the tackles grinder. And, you know, I'm going to overpower you for that extra yard, which, you know, keeps your team on the field in third and one. And obviously for fantasy production, it gets you into the goal line, into the end zone. And that's what we want too. So I love Najee Harris. I love him, love him, love him.
He's my top running back in this class. Ray GQ, shout out Ray, tweeted it out last night that said that there's one tier run running back, and that's Najee Harris. And While you can, I mean, Travis Etienne's a good running back, right? I'm not going to sit here and say that Travis Etienne is not a good running back. Najee Harris is the most complete back in this class. He catches the ball well. He has great vision. He creates an open space for himself. He's a big back that's also athletic. I mean, there was that one play yesterday early on in the, I think it was the second quarter, where, I mean, as big as he is, he's leaping over guys. I mean, he's athletic for his size. I mean, he's everything that you want out of a complete running back. When you're comparing that to guys like Travis Etienne, who I made the comment, and I was half joking a little bit, but part of me was kind of serious, where I tweeted out that Trevor Lawrence has better vision than Travis Etienne does. And while I was being, while I was over-exaggerating a little bit, you know, Travis Etienne's vision and creating an open space by himself is a problem. I mean, if the hole doesn't just open up for him, he doesn't create an open space and create by himself as much as you would like to. Now, if there is a hole, he's going to explode and you're not going to catch him. So he does have that long speed for sure. But when you look at these top two running backs, and then arguably, I think we're going to sit here and say top three running backs with Javonte Williams. I know I'm not going to get an argument out of you there. You're over there smirking.
No, but, God, I love that guy. Oh, but and when you more, look at these top, honestly, the more I look at him, the more I like him. I mean, like when I really start breaking down his film, holy cow, is Javonte Williams good. But anyway, back to your point.
I'm trying not to put him over Travis Etienne, and I think I might have already done it. But I love Javonte Williams. But yeah, I mean, when you look at Najee Harris, he's the most complete back. He's tier one by himself, I think, as of right now. Now, the combine and draft position and draft landing spot could go in and change all of that. But, I mean, if he gets, you know, he's been mocked to Pittsburgh a whole lot. If he gets that Pittsburgh draft capital, can you imagine Najee Harris in Pittsburgh? I mean, he's immediately an RB1 for me.
Everybody wants to put the bigger physical bruising backs in Pittsburgh, right? I mean, because I was just thinking right before you said that, I was thinking, man, Javonte Williams would look good in Pittsburgh too. But I would never say Travis Etienne would look good in Pittsburgh. I have no idea why. I would say he would look good in San Francisco. But who knows? It just, we have that mentality of these football programs and what the perfect match is. And I think nobody argues with that. It's like, oh yeah, those guys would be great there. But yeah, landing spot will be huge. You know, clearly when it comes to a running back, my thing is draft capital. You'll get up high so you know they're going to get the opportunity, and then get on a team where you know they're going to get the opportunity, where they're going to get a high likelihood of being the RB1 on that team pretty much from day one. And then you know, okay, we're set here. And that's what you want from these guys. So you just hope that they get taken by teams like that. Now watch, Green Bay will draft, you know, one of these running backs in the second round again, and poor Kane will be so upset about his A.J. Dillon love affair. God, was he... Oh, the victory lap during that game against Tennessee. He was going crazy. Anyway, back to Alabama and transitioning into quarterback. Another one of these guys that's in everyone's top six, but he's down at the back end, and we're not sure, you know, where's he going to end up? Mac Jones. Alabama, of course, you know, I can't see him as a round one guy yet. I think he's going to be another guy that falls out of that first round. And I think some points I've heard, you know, again, going back to Kane, he should be on the show right now. I'm talking about him so much, but you know, he says, you know, the guy doesn't face pressure almost ever. Like he's never having to elude a rusher because that offense is so good. And that's a fair point. I mean, you don't know how is he going to respond to that kind of thing when he gets into the NFL and all of a sudden, you know, he's getting it, you know, right up the middle in your face. You got to make quick decisions. Or, you know, maybe in the championship game, if Ohio State's defensive line plays like it did, you know, last night and completely made, you know, Trevor Lawrence look human, are they going to do that? You know, are we going to see that? Hopefully we see that in that game and we can see, okay, how does he respond to that? Because that would be a really interesting thing to watch, I think, in that championship game. You know, I still think Mac Jones is, if he's not day one, I think he's going to go day two because he has a lot of traits that you like. Accuracy is one of them. He's got a pretty good arm, not a great arm, but man, he throws a nice deep ball. That's for sure. And I think he can make, you know, all the throws. It's just a matter of, you know, where does he land? And again, what system does he get in? Where are you on Jones?
The more I watch Jones, the more I start to like him more than I did at the beginning of the season. And shout out to Ray again. I mean, he was all over Mac Jones at the beginning of the season, and that's paid dividends for him, for sure. I mean, when you look at Mac Jones, he throws a beautiful deep ball, we said. I mean, he's doing more with that team, but more with an Alabama roster than arguably, I mean, I'm gonna make the comment here, but arguably than Tua did with a more loaded roster. I mean, Mac Jones doesn't have as much talent on the roster as Tua did last year, and he's arguably doing more with it. So, I mean, you got to take notice of that a little bit. The thing with Mac Jones is he's not your quote-unquote new age prototypical NFL quarterback. I mean, he's not going to run around in the pocket. He's not going to extend plays with his legs. I mean, he's a pocket passer. And when you don't face pressure like he hasn't, I mean, there's cause for concern of how is he going to react with pressure. So, hopefully my Buckeyes can get some pressure on him in the national championship and we can see what he's made of. But, I mean, I like Mac Jones the more I watch him. For me, for sure, he's got two sorts of career paths. He's either going to be a late round one, early round two guy that ends up fizzling out, or he's going to go to a team like the Patriots or the Saints and be the best passer out of the entire group. I mean, if he lands in the right situation with the right coach that schemes for him and just allows him to be smart with the football like he's done all season, he could be a great quarterback. But he's one of those guys that's going to need the right landing spot, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree. I think, you know, I put him, you know, right there with Kyle Trask in that they both have, you know, a lot of positive traits. But like you said, with Jones and Trask the same way, they're not going to, you know, beat you with legs. They're not going to get a lot of those kind of yards, and then they need the right landing spot. So I think that's a good comp, at least in my opinion. Sticking with the my last guy I want to talk about in Alabama, and that's Jaleel Billingsley. The tight end does not get a lot of discussion, although you brought him up in our most recent pod when we did a kind of a 2022 breakdown as, you know, that second tight end to look at in that class, a pretty small class, you know, I think not nearly as deep as the next rookie class, 2021. Holy cow, is that tight end class going to be huge? But man, this kid can play. I mean, he looks a little small for a tight end, but he moves really well, so he makes up for that. He's got very reliable hands. He is definitely a tight end to watch next year. You know, sometimes it's really hard when you get these tight ends on these, you know, high end teams. And we'll talk about another one in the next game, but you know, because they don't get a lot of opportunity, right? I mean, there's so many wide receivers. There's a good running back to throw to. So you just don't see that opportunity at Alabama that he might get in another program. But man, this kid looks really good. And for those of you that aren't aware of Billingsley, you know, you're kind of you know, fading tight end. I mean, he is a 4-star prospect. So, you know, 6'4", 230 pounds. So he's, you know, when I say smallish, I mean skinnier. Not, you know, he doesn't have the 250, 260 size that you look a lot or you look for in a tight end. But man, he looks natural catching the ball as a receiver, at least from that aspect of playing tight end. What do you think of Billingsley? Yeah.
He's not a blocking tight end, I think is what you're trying to say. He's not going to be in line and throwing blocks in the run game, but he's definitely a great receiving tight end. He's got great hands. He runs routes, and he's an underrated tight end prospect because, I mean, he's been having a good season, and he's been having the good season out of a tight end that nobody's talking about. You know, we see these explosive numbers from Kyle Pitts and Brevin Jordan and whatnot, but when you look at Billingsley, he's having a great season under Mac Jones on a loaded roster with earlier Jalen Waddle, with Devontae Smith, with Najee Harris, and he's still putting up the numbers. So he's an intriguing name to watch in his year's draft class for sure.
Yeah, and then we've got on the Notre Dame side, you know, I'm still breaking down stuff on Ian Book. I'm not sure where to put him, but he's a late round prospect in my opinion. Nothing special there. But the running backs are interesting for Notre Dame, and I'll get to the last one, the last position that's even better, but Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree both bring a lot, I think, to the table. Obviously different games. You're talking kind of a thunder and lightning type, you know, combination at running back, but I like both these kids. I think they both have an opportunity to be, you know, clearly draftable running backs, you know, when they're eligible. I want to say Williams is 2022. Tyree's a freshman. So he, again, another 2023 running back that looks really good. You know, what are your thoughts on their running, on those two guys for the next couple of draft classes?
Man, this 2022 or 2023 draft class is going to be so loaded. I mean, that's all I can think of. I mean, you've got Tyree, you've got Tank Bigsby, you've got Seth McGowan, you've got Bijan Robinson. I mean, if you need a running back, I know we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever we did our 2022 class. I mean, next year's not really the year to get a running back. I mean, next year's not really the year to get a lot of positions, but for sure running back. I mean, if you can wait to 2023, this class is going to be loaded. I love myself some Kyren Williams, and the more I watch him, the more I fall in love with what he does. I mean, if this running back group progresses and keeps running the football the way they are, I don't think it's any stretch of the imagination to say that they can't have the same running attack that Carolina had with their Thunder and Lightning, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. I mean, they can have that same sort of impact, I believe, and they both look great, and they both look like they're going to be draft-eligible guys in their respective draft classes.
Yeah, we definitely see eye-to-eye there. And then the final guy to talk about in this game, because he's already the real deal, and that is rare for a freshman tight end, and that's Michael Mayer of Notre Dame. This kid, in my opinion, is everything you want in a tight end. He does it all. He can block. He's got the size. He's got the understanding of the game. but he gets open. He catches everything you throw to him. He knows how to use his body to position himself to get contested catches. Got good hands. He's not the athletic, freak of a Kyle Pitts, but there's still numerous examples of tight ends like Mayer that get into the NFL and are successful and are good fantasy producers, guys that you want on your roster to get you, points. And I know I've said you got to fade tight end because the hit rate is so low. But man, if I'm in a two tight end league or a tight end premium where you get a lot of those extra points, this kid's going to be hard to fade in my upcoming Devy drafts. I think if you don't take him now, there's no way somebody else won't. And so he'll be gone and you're just not going to have an opportunity.
You see, you got to fade tight ends. And we talked about it. You got to fade incoming freshmen pretty much as a whole until you see who's going to pop. I mean, there's just the hit rate on incoming freshmen is just so low that it's hard to project who's going to end up being the guy that to grab in these classes. The flip side of that is when you see one that pops, you've got to go out and grab them, especially at the tight end position. You can't let guys like this sit around because the chances that we're going to get 4, 5, 6 tight ends out of a draft class, I mean, that just doesn't happen. So when you see one that pops, you've got to make the moves to go out and get them. And Michael Mayer is one of those guys. And, I read that name and I still, in the back of my head, I read it like Shaq does. Like I read it in Shaq's voice and I can't stop myself from doing it. So I'm trying really hard not to say it like him because I'm going to butcher his Boston accent. He's going to text me and give me crap for it. So I'm trying not to do that. But I love Michael Mayer. I mean, he blocks well. He's athletic. He's got the size. He's a great pass catcher. I mean, there's nothing not to like about this kid for sure.
Yeah, and even for those of you that are nervous about taking a tight end and the hit rate, like you said, he's already proven that he can play. I mean, true freshman, he's getting all this opportunity at Notre Dame for a really good program. So he's checked off that box already. Assuming that he continues to progress as a tight end, his value isn't going to go down. So you can always take him in your next draft and then hold on to him. And then as you get into that 2023 rookie draft and he's sitting there, maybe he goes first or second round, who knows, but his value won't decline. And so you can always move him later and get something for that, if you don't want to sit there and continue to wait on getting production from the tight end, because that's been my rip on drafting tight ends early in Devy, is that you have to wait for them to get out of college, and then you have to wait the what seems like at least a minimum 2 years for them to be really productive in the NFL. So that's a long time to have a guy sit on your roster and not give you anything. But man, there are exceptions to everything, and he could be one of them. Next, I'd like to jump back before we get to the last game played, and that's the Cincinnati-Georgia game, the Peach Bowl, which actually turned out to be one of the better bowl games from a perspective of we weren't sure who was going to win the game until the very end. I mean, that was an exciting finish, a great, a tough game. I think it played out a lot like we thought it would. Two really strong defensive teams. And your thoughts on a name that continues to, I think, gain a little steam and could be one of those guys that sneaks up, if he goes out. I don't remember if he's a senior or junior. I got to look that up. But Desmond Ridder, quarterback from Cincinnati, what are your feelings on this kid as an NFL prospect? My observation is that the accuracy is a concern, but the athleticism is absolutely intriguing. Where are you at with Ridder? What do you feel about this guy?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Accuracy is a little bit of concern for me. I mean, there were several times in this game where he was overthrowing guys and just missing some receivers. But what he does, I talked about Spencer Rattler and what he does that you just can't teach kids is what Desmond Ridder does on the football field. I mean, he's an athletic quarterback. He's got the quote-unquote intangibles, not like we can describe what that is, but I mean, his pocket presence, his ability to feel pressure and slide away from pressure. And I mean, we're saying accuracy is an issue. He still passed like 65, completed 65% of his passes yesterday. So it's a little bit of a concern, but it's not something that I'm going to knock him on. He's not going to be one of the top quarterbacks that go in this draft if he comes out. But for me, when I watch him, there's a lot of Dak Prescott in his game whenever I watch Desmond Ridder. And I can see kind of the same career path where he goes late around, you know, round four and ends up getting thrust into a starting role, maybe due to injury or whatever, and just balls out in the NFL. I mean, he's got that athleticism. He's got the intangibles that you want in a quarterback. And if he can be coached on his footwork and his accuracy, the sky's the limit for this kid.
Yeah, I like where you got into that comparison. And I think that, you know, round three, round four, ideal spot for him as a team that does not have any intention of playing him from day one. It's like, nope, you are going to sit there and learn and develop, and we're going to have a transitional quarterback to get you ready. You know, an obvious one for me would be my Minnesota Vikings. They haven't invested an early round quarterback since Teddy Bridgewater, and that blew up when his knee blew up. But, you know, we don't need to even talk about the guy before that. But Christian Ponder, so bad. Anyway, I digress.
Reminiscing.
You know, they've got their guy locked in for a couple more years. And so, you know, with Kirk Cousins, so it would make sense to take a guy like this. You know, don't spend first round draft capital or second round draft capital. It's like, no, you're not ready for that. You've got a capable quarterback. I mean, Cousins has his negatives that we're not going to get into, but you know, he makes a lot of good plays too. And you know, the offense was definitely not the issue with this team, the reason why this team is going to win six or seven games. But if you pick a kid that can sit there for a year or two at least and just learn and develop, not having any pressure, you know, maybe you find opportunities in games to get him in there and get him a little bit of a taste. I think that's, you know, he's one of those guys I would love to see that get that kind of a situation, you know, put him into that and, you know, set him up for success, you know, instead of him going to a team where it's like, okay, you're playing from day one and, you know, learn on the job. That can be risky. I mean, it works, but you know, I'm intrigued by this kid, but I'll admit I have not watched much of Desmond Ridder at all until yesterday. So I'm going to have to go back and look at more of the film. One guy I don't need to see more film on, because what a monster is George Pickens. Holy cow. That kid. Wow. Wow. He's so good. Like, he is everything you want in a wide receiver. I mean, that diving catch he made on that long pass by JT Daniels, where, you know, it should have been, you know, drop it in his lap and he walks into the end zone. But that was amazing. And he just does it all. And he might not have the production profile we look for because, you know, again, the offense doesn't throw the ball as much. Although I think clearly next year, you know, with JT Daniels there and a full season, then that could change, right? I mean, Daniels didn't play as many games, but man, Pickens, he is the 2022 number one for me, and it's not even close at this point. I know you might have a couple guys you want to throw up there, but he's my number one guy next year.
I like Garrett Wilson, but I mean, there might be some Ohio State homerism in that as
what?
Well. But I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, we don't need to go into George Pickens. We know how good of a receiver he is. For me, what's really intriguing about this game and the Georgia offense as a whole, the last half of the season, is how much different they look with Daniels at quarterback. I mean, this is now an air it out. Like, we're going to throw the ball. We're not going to beat you on the run. We're not passing to set up the run. We're going to run to set up the pass. And this team just looks fun now. And George Pickens is benefiting from this the last few weeks. I mean, the biggest knock on him was his production profile because he was playing on a team that didn't pass the ball. Well, now he's playing on a team that passes the ball. Look what we got in George Pickens. I mean, I love the kid. I mean, we don't need to beat a dead horse any more than we already have. I mean, George Pickens is the real deal. He's going to be a stud next year. If for some reason somebody's lower on him because of his production profile, take an opportunity to seek out your league mates and go trade for him, because this kid's going to ball out with a full season under Daniels next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other guy I think that's going to ball out with a full season is JT Daniels. Apparently, Georgia learned that since they didn't need Justin Fields, they did need someone else, and they got JT Daniels, you know, five-star prospect. And, you know, with a full, hopefully a normal offseason, you know, spring practices, that kind of thing, that offense can get to be a little more substantial, where they can really start looking, you know, more balanced, we'll say, because they're so run heavy, at least in the past. But I like JT Daniels. I think he's kind of a sleeper prospect. I mean, yeah, obviously in the Devy community, people know the name and they like him, but he's not popping like some of these other guys, just because from a lack of playing time. So, you know, if he can get in a full year next year, he could really, you know, realize that potential that he had as a five-star. And I like him more and more that I watch him. I mean, so thoughts on Daniels, where are you at with him?
He's definitely at the top of my quarterback class for his draft class. I mean, I like Daniels. He's somebody that I wasn't high on in the offseason just because of his play later in his freshman season. I didn't see it. And he was somebody that had to go and watch some more. And now that I watch more JT Daniels, I mean, he throws a great ball. I love what he does. You know, as a quarterback prospect, he's up there for me.
Of course, I'm assuming he's coming back just from, again, the lack of playing. He did play a full season at USC and looked good. So he has that. He feels like one of those guys that should come back and play another season. But we'll see what happens. Who knows? Maybe, you know, these guys, they go pro and when they think they're ready, or they're getting good information from somebody to tell them they're going to be a high draft pick. But the last one on Georgia, Zamir White. We talked about him in the past, running back. Of course, a couple of ACL injuries in his past, but he's, at least for now, recovered and looks good. He looks quick, fast, aggressive, strong, you know, everything you want in a running back. I still get nervous about guys with ACLs like that. And so my thought is, you know, he's probably already on a roster in your Devy League. He should be anyway. If you have him, hold him, you know, for sure, because I think he's going to get on a team. But the hope there is that he gets an opportunity in the NFL and he looks good, and now his value is going to go up, and that's when you sell, because those knees are going to come back to haunt him eventually. I mean, we just see too many examples of guys with an injury history, and they might pop off for 2-3 seasons, maybe even 4, but eventually it will happen where they'll just shut down. I mean, it's just too much stress and beating on those legs. So I guess that would be my recommendation. If you've got White, is hope that he pops and then sell him while you can and get top value. What are your thoughts on him?
He's a hold to sell for sure. I mean, if you can get value with him, if he does end up hitting, I mean, get whatever value you can to get out from under him. Because, I mean, you look at guys with knee issues, your Todd Gurley's, your Sonny Michel's, your all of the Georgia running backs, really, I guess. I'm trying to think of some more Georgia running backs that have some knee issues. I mean, that seems to be a Georgia running back thing. But, I mean, the knee issues don't end up going well. I mean, you get them for maybe 2 or 3 seasons, like you said, and then they're done. So I would sell him just about as quickly as you can. When you look at his game, he's physical and he's got some speed to him. I'm a little worried about his lateral agility and being able to be elusive, you know, finding the holes behind the line of scrimmage. That worries me a little bit. He hasn't shown the ability to really be able to do that all that much. So if I can get anything for him substantial, I'm doing that just about as soon as I can.
Yeah, I think we definitely see eye to eye on that one, and kind of our strategy if we happen to have Zamir White on our roster. Let's go to the last game, the Sugar Bowl last night. This just in, OSU crushed. You may not have caught that as a Buckeyes fan, but that was awesome. And really everything offensively for Ohio State was awesome. I mean, they absolutely just dominated. You know, Trey Sermon picked up pretty much where he left off in the Big Ten championship game when he set a record, Ohio State record, with, you know, 330 some yards, I think. And, you know, he is not a guy we've talked a lot about, but all of a sudden he's looking physical. He's looking faster than he's ever looked. And when this kid, the thing that I've noticed about Sermon, when he runs, he does not look to avoid contact. He looks to finish and hit the guy that's trying to tackle him, which was interesting to me. You probably know more about this kid than I do, but man, he he kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. I'm not saying he's going to jump up to the top of the running back rankings, but he's at least somebody we gotta do a little more investigation on, I think, and see, okay, what's this kid's likelihood of hitting in the NFL when he gets there?
For me, Trey Sermon's been one that I've been struggling to try and rank this season. When you look at him, he shows some great speed. I mean, he looks quick, he looks physical, and you know, he looks like he could be a later round running back, maybe round two or three, that could end up hitting on your fantasy teams next year. But then there's the aspect of his game where he's running behind a good Ohio State line, and a lot of these big runs that you see him bust off, I mean, the Ohio State line has just opened up these holes that are, you know, just huge, and he's running 10, 15 yards before he even gets touched. So for me, I'm trying to figure out if a lot of what Trey Sermon's stats-wise have been the last few games have been because of what he's done, you know, on his own and creating space and having good vision and creating on his own, or is the Ohio State offensive line creating for him? And that's a real cause for concern for me, because when you watch his game, I mean, his first point of contact is sometimes 8, 10, 12 yards down the field. So,
yeah, those are fair points, and that's, you know, that's again something that the more you look into his play and you watch the games, you can pick that up on film. It's like, okay, is he elusive at all, or is it like you said, he's just hitting the hole that's in front of him? I do like how there's been numerous examples where that hole's been in front of him and he hits it fast and he has the speed to take it to the house, you know, so he can pull away and not get caught from behind. So he's a finisher in that regard. Another guy that looks just absolutely amazing, and he needed this game. And it's kind of funny that I say that, because, you know, before the game, my daughter asked me, so, you know, who do you want to win in this game? I said, you know what? I really don't care who wins. I just want a good game. And I really want Justin Fields to play well. You know, he's had a couple of downer games, and I'd like to see him, you know, have a good one against a good team. I was not disappointed. Wow, did he look the part. And really, in my opinion, this is the Justin Fields that's the most common, you know, aspects of his game. That's what we saw in this one. It's like this is the Justin Fields that normally shows up. I mean, he's slinging the ball around accurately. He's hitting guys all over the field. He's running for yards, you know, making good decisions. You know, I think one of the things about him, the big question is, you know, how quickly can he progress from his first read to the second to the third, you know, do the progression, the mental aspects of the game. That's a common thing for every quarterback. I mean, you have, it's tough. It's a tougher thing to measure unless you really are just watching them constantly. And, you know, with him, it's everything else is there. I mean, he is so, you know, like I've heard discussions, you know, offline, you know, someone said, you know, where do you got, you know, Justin Fields? Is he, you know, QB2, QB3? And my comment last night to a guy was, oh, he's QB2. He's closer to QB1 than he is to QB3. And in my opinion, I mean, I've still got Lawrence as QB1, but he has absolutely solidified himself as the second quarterback. I'd be shocked if he wasn't the second guy taken. I mean, your thoughts on Fields? I know when we did the mock draft, you know, Bruning took him number one overall, but where are you at with this kid? I mean, was this the one that answered all your questions?
So I'm going to take off my Ohio State fan hat, and I'm going to set it to the side here for a second, and we're just going to talk about Justin Fields, the prospect. And, you know, part of me, I think Justin Fields might have a Twitter, and he might check it pretty frequently, because there were a lot of people that were ranking Justin Fields as QB3 all the way down to QB5, I saw. And all he does is come out and have a 6-touchdown performance. I mean, he goes up and lights it up. You know, people have cause for concern about his deep ball. Well, he can't throw the deep ball. I saw plenty of deep balls last night. I mean, his arm looked phenomenal last night to me. So that's out of the question for me. Oh, he doesn't pick up blitz well. He doesn't go through progressions well. He seemed to be ripping apart Clemson last night from what I saw. So, I mean, QBs are allowed to have bad games, and Justin Fields is allowed to have a bad game. What he did against Clemson last night solidified himself as QB2. Like, I don't want to hear any other talk that Zach Wilson is above him or Trey Lance is above him. Look, Justin Fields, you said it perfectly. He's closer to QB1 than he is QB3 as a prospect. The biggest thing that I think we haven't talked about any of the times we've talked about Justin Fields is his mental toughness. I mean, we just as might as well have thought that this kid went out there, he had that long run, and then he gets that targeting hit on him, and all of a sudden we think that he broke his ribs, right? I mean, he's limping off the field. He's down on the field holding his ribs. We thought he's hurt. He's done. He's out of the game. What does he do but come in the next two plays and throw a touchdown pass? He comes out and lights up Clemson in the second half. I mean, the mental toughness this kid has is something that, you know, I talk about things you can't teach quarterbacks, and that's something you can't teach a kid, is to go out there and just play through pain and play through injury and be the quarterback that we all thought you were. I mean, we can shut down this Justin Fields as QB3 or below talk now. He's solidified himself as QB2, and quite frankly, if somebody took him above Trevor Lawrence, which I don't think is going to happen. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is still my QB1. I'm still taking him at the 101 in all the super flex leagues I have. But if somebody took him 101 above Trevor Lawrence, I'm not arguing the pick. Now, for me, if somebody takes, you know, Zach Wilson above Justin Fields, then we can start having that conversation. But, I mean, I love what he did last night. You know, Ohio State fan base aside, I love Justin Fields. I think he's a phenomenal prospect. He does everything that you want out of a quarterback. And if you have him on any of your rosters, you're jumping for joy that he did what he did against Clemson last night.
Yeah, he does it all. I mean, he's going to get you those yards, you know, with his legs. He's going to score some touchdowns. He's going to throw for a ton. I mean, he's got a cannon for an arm. There's nothing not to like. So, yeah, the development of Fields is going to be awesome to watch. You know, presumably he goes to the Jets, but who knows? I mean, if the Jets are going to stick with Sam Darnold, he might fall a little farther if somebody trades up to get him. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see. And the last thing on this kid that I'm going to mention, because I've seen more of this too on Twitter, stop comparing him to past Ohio State quarterbacks. You have to analyze and grade the player, not the jersey. It doesn't matter. You know, he's not those guys. So if you're doing that, you're making a mistake. I mean, there's probably rare examples of a position at a particular college that every time they went to the NFL, they failed, and that could be a scheme thing. This ain't it. All right, so you just forget about that nonsense. The last guy in Ohio State that I want to talk about is really one of those guys that has opened my eyes to just how good he is, and that's Chris Olave, wide receiver. Man, does he look good. I mean, so smooth. Such a great route runner. I asked in a chat last night, and I didn't get a response because everybody was so focused on the targeting hit, and that's all they could talk about, and I think it just got buried in the chat. But tell me I'm stupid for this comp. He reminds me a little bit of Stephon Diggs. In he has the speed to beat you deep, but he's such a good route runner, and he's so good with the hands that he can do all that underneath stuff and make the good catches on the sidelines. He just looks like a tactician at wide receiver that I know I'm going to get open and create separation because I do more than just run fast. Man, he is skyrocketing up my list. I'm not sure where he's going to end up, but I'm really hoping this kid is a day two pick that other people will fade, and I can get him, you know, early second round of rookie drafts. That's where I'm at with this guy. I think he's the real deal. I love him.
I'm not going to argue with the Stephon Diggs comp because I saw somebody comp him to Keenan Allen, and while that's a different, you know, body type and everything like that, I mean, the point is still the same. I mean, when you look at Chris Olave, his route running skills are phenomenal. I mean, the way he explodes through breaks. I mean, I'm thinking of that end zone where he exploded off the DV to run the comeback route and just catches that easy touchdown pass. I mean, he's a tactician when it comes to route running. And he's got the long speed to beat you deep as well. I mean, he's going to be the rookie round two draft steal of your roster. I mean, if you get him in round two of your rookie draft and pair him up with a quarterback, a top running back, or a top wide receiver, I mean, you've won your draft. Because I mean, that's how highly I think of this kid. I mean, he's a stud. When you look at the most important trait to be a successful receiver in the NFL, which are route running, and this kid does it phenomenally. So yeah, I love my sauce and Chris Olave.
Yeah, I think the one you're talking about is the one that I've got in the front of my mind, the touchdown he scored, where it was like the front corner of the end zone. He had that defensive back completely turned around the wrong way. I mean, no chance for that defensive back to make a play. And of course, Fields, the timing on the throw was perfect. So it's like, okay, that was executed as perfectly as a play could be executed. There was zero chance for defensive success there. To transition over to Clemson, I'm not going to get into Lawrence. He's the 101. He still is, you know. But he proved the theory that, again, if you get a lot of pressure on a quarterback, even a great one, they're going to have bad games, and that's what happens. It happens to every quarterback. Not a big deal. He definitely was forcing things at the end. But the guy that I'm most interested in, because I'm just not sure where to put him, is Amari Rodgers. What turned out to be his number one wide receiver this season, and not a guy that I was even looking at coming into the year. I was all excited about, you know, Frank Ladson Jr. and, you know, some of the other guys there that didn't have the seasons we hoped for, especially with Lawrence throwing them the ball. But Amari Rodgers, I can't get a handle on him. I mean, he still seems like just a guy to me. Like, okay, he was the right guy in the right place at Clemson, and so maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe he's going to be a day two pick and end up being something. But it's such a deep wide receiver class that, you know, I think in rookie drafts he's probably third round. You know, could be a third round steal. Like that's where you should be targeting a guy like Amari Rodgers. Obviously, depending on, you know, where he gets drafted, both draft capital and then, you know, the team that takes him. Your thoughts on Rodgers, help me out.
Shaq called in the offseason. He said Amari Rodgers was somebody to look for. And, you know, for this season, we've seen that come to be the case. When you look at Amari Rodgers, though, I mean, he might be one of those situations where he was in the right place at the right time. You know, he was on a Clemson team with Joe Ngata on injury and with, what's his name that had the neck issue. I can't even remember his name right now. I'm blanking.
Oh, Justin Ross.
Justin Ross, yeah. With Justin Ross being out, I mean, he was the only receiver that they really had any sort of experience. So he just steps up into a perfect situation. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a case for that for me, where he might have just been the right place at the right time and has been the benefactor of this. Because, I mean, if I can get him in round three of my rookie drafts, yeah, sure, I'm taking him. But if I've got to spend round two draft capital on him, he's not a guy that I'm looking to grab, because there's just so many other guys that I like better. Now, you mentioned Amari Rodgers. One guy that I really want to talk about is Clemson's Cornell Powell. And this guy has been quietly having himself a really decent season. I mean, he had over 100 yards this game. He had two touchdowns. He's got over 880 yards on the season and seven touchdowns. And when you watch his game, I mean, he's physical. He's running through guys in the open field. He runs great routes. I mean, he's got the speed to beat you over the top. If I'm picking a Clemson receiver right now that's somebody I want on my roster, Cornell Powell is more interesting to me than Amari Rodgers has been the last few weeks. He's somebody that if I'm keeping an eye out on anyone, it's Cornell Powell.
Yeah, he could be that deep, you know, deep pick, as nobody's talking about him. And, you know, he's probably going to be, you know, if he's drafted a day three, I mean, if he goes undrafted, then yeah, whatever. If you've got a five-round draft, you can take him, but undrafted guys usually don't pan out. But yeah, that's interesting. I think EJ Williams, the true freshman, a guy to watch going into next season. You know, of course, it's Clemson, right? They just continue to stock up with four- and five-star prospects. So it'll be interesting to see if he develops. He got more and more time as the season went on. So I think there's some definite talent there to keep your eye on. That is the end of our show sheet, so that'll be the end of our show. Matt, any final thoughts, and where can people find your work?
So, just happy new year to everybody. I hope you guys had a safe new year. Here's to hoping that 2021 is a better year than 2020 was. I'm hopefully optimistic that it's going to be a good year for a lot of us. You guys can find me on Twitter at @DHH_Matt. My rankings are up on Dynasty Nerds. I've got a recent article that just dropped 2 days ago on Dynasty Nerds previewing some of these bowl games that we have coming up. So feel free to check that out. other than that, love to hit you guys up on Twitter. If you have any questions, hit me up. Love to answer questions, trade offers, anything like that. Love to talk football. So always happy to have interactions on Twitter. And here's to a good new year for all of us, for sure.
Amen to that. Hindsight is now literally 2020. Woohoo! We're done with it. I also want to just call out to our boy Shaq. Couldn't make it at Dynasty Tools on Twitter. He's still out there on Twitter, so you can still talk to him that way. I even threw a question his way on Twitter, but he must not have seen it, but I'll have to hit him up again because I'm absolutely curious about this from a special teams, because he's our special teams guru, you know, the main guy. Why, and this is just rhetorical, but why at college in their punt formation do they always line 2 to 3 guys up right in front of the punter, but you never see that in the pros? Why is that a college formation thing? I need him to explain that to me. So Shaq, if you're listening to this, you got to help me out here, man. Help out your guy. But he's at, you know, Dynasty Nerds as well, co-host of the Dynasty Tools podcast whenever he has a chance. Of course, that thing hasn't been going, just like he hasn't been on here because he's way too busy. We are part of the Dynasty Happy Hour team of podcasts. Of course, the Dynasty Happy Hour, Tim Keller, Doug Eddy, and Tyler Gunther, recording every Sunday night. And back last week, first episode in a while, the DHH Contractor. So that's more of a non-point scoring season podcast. That's Randy, a.k.a. Memphis, where he will go through your roster and give you kind of a breakdown and a strategy so you can have future success for your Dynasty roster. So reach out to him. I am at SkipNewton31 on Twitter. Would love to talk with anyone, get into some good, healthy debates on rankings. Of course, that's going to really pick up as we finish the college season and the NFL season and get into, you know, non-point scoring season mode and draft mode. There's going to be a lot of draft talk now, you know, between now and the end of April. So that'll be a ton of fun. I do cover the ACC for the NFL DraftBible.com. Just recently transitioned from the Dynasty Draft Room, so super excited about that. We're getting into draft mode as well, so I'm going to be doing draft profiles on all of the ACC guys that are eligible and coming out for the 2021 draft. So I'm already starting to work on that, and those will start to pop here in the next, you know, few weeks. That really excited about that opportunity. Still waiting for yet one more big announcement that's coming from NFLDraftBible.com. Unfortunately, it hasn't come out yet. I was expecting it yesterday, and it hasn't happened, so I can't say anything, but hopefully...
You've got me excited, man. I've been looking forward to what this announcement is the last few weeks.
Oh, man. Zach Patra, you know, the president of DraftBible.com, I know he's excited. I heard him on another podcast. It's like, dude, let's just make this happen. But anyway, we'll talk about that as soon as it happens, as it becomes official. But thank you, everyone, for listening and sticking with us. Let's get excited about a new year. We hope every one of you had an awesome new year. And again, reach out to us for anything. If you've got, you know, trade talks you want us to get into, if you want us to talk about, you know, the rankings, we can talk about that. We're willing to help you out in any way. So we have a huge appreciation for all of our listeners. You guys are the best. I've been contacted a few times, you know, with DMs on Twitter, and it's just awesome to hear that, you know, people are listening and you guys are the best. So on that note, here's to 2021. We're back and we'll be getting into all of our deep dives as we get into the future classes, and of course we'll go through all the conferences and talk about the players to be looking for as we get into getting ready for next season. Take care, everyone, and be a good human.